It is Tuesday, July the 30th, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm George Prentiss, in for Gemma Gaudette. We've heard a lot about how climate change is expected to impact national parks, putting animals and birds in dangerous situations. But what about the cultural sites found in national parks? A Boise State University anthropologist has teamed up with the National Park Service's Climate Change Response Program to help park rangers assess the dangers of climate change. The project is the only one of its kind, and joining us in studio to talk about this effort is Boise State Professor Pei-Lin Yu, and by phone we have graduate student Jennifer Cuthbertson, and thank you to you both for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Jennifer, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm good.
Wonderful. And you're in California?
Yeah, in San Francisco, but great to be able to, modern technology.
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us. So tell us how this research came on into your life. I'm guessing everything comes with a personal experience.
Yes, of course. I have worked for the National Park Service off and on as an archaeologist and anthropologist to protect cultural heritage sites and resources in national parks for many years. And more recently for a science network where we have put together partnerships between the National Park Service and researchers to investigate the impacts of climate change on our national parks. The natural resources, the birds and the bees, are under extensive study and have received the majority of the funding and support. But our cultural identity and heritage have received a little bit less. So we're at the stage now in the National Park Service, and they have reached out to me as a researcher on this topic to look at how climate change is affecting our cultural heritage as a nation in our national parks.
So which sites are we talking about? Which parks?
Oh, pretty much all of them. I think we're up to something like 416 or 417 units of the National Park Service, which includes parks, national seashores, national recreation areas, national monuments, a lot of these different kinds of areas. So it's a nationwide, potentially nationwide issue. At the moment, we are working with the Arid Desert Southwest Parks. So these are some of the iconic, beautiful Native American ancient communities represented by places like Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde, and Bandelier National Monument, which is where we're most recently working.
And give us an idea of those sites and what has happened. In other words, compare today to a decade ago or two decades ago.
How about four decades ago?
Okay.
I visited these national park units as a child and grew up with many tribal friends in the area, attending ceremonies in or near these very important sacred sites to Native peoples of the Southwest. Bandelier is where we held a recent workshop on the issue, and it has a beautiful canyon running through it, a waterway called Frijoles Canyon, with these enormous church-like ponderosa pines that are adjacent to ancient architecture, once called ruins. We don't like that word anymore because it's still relevant to people today. In the old days, you could walk through and hear the birds singing and enjoy the shade of the trees. Because of warming climate, pine beetles are killing the trees. There have been a series of monstrous fires in the area that are unprecedented in modern times, probably going back 6,000 years. And storms are changing too. So when you have a desert environment where trees die and are burned, then you have a giant storm. The erosion events are crazy. So in 2013, there was a massive wall of muddy water that roared through the park, endangered visitors, park personnel, and the ancient culture and its values.
And that deterioration is accelerating, I'm guessing?
As far as we can tell, it is. Yes. And so in the American Southwest, which we don't often think about with regard to climate change, the drought, the heat, and the storm events are combining along with superfires to really threaten these particular parks. There are other parks such as Everglades and the coastal and island parks, which are experiencing such drastic sea level rise. We may have to accept the fact that those parks will not be there for our grandchildren, which is very difficult for the National Park Service, because when they say yes to working there, they are promising to preserve unimpaired these resources for future generations, and it's very hard to do that.
Let's bring in your research partner, and that's Jennifer Cuthbertson, a grad student working on this. Jennifer, what's compelling to you about this work?
I just think it's something that we're dealing with currently, but it also has effects into the future. So being a student myself, of course, I've kind of entered into the climate change situation I feel like as it's happening, and there are very important things happening right now, policies and governmental change that are affecting these things. And so working with the Park Service, you start to see some of this firsthand. Up in Boise, we still see the effects. We have for the last couple of years, specifically with winters. But down in the south, we don't think about it too much in Boise or even in Idaho because it's, to us, kind of far away. And we think about the south as being a little bit more naturally hot. But then you go there and you see the effects of climate change, just the niche little effects that you wouldn't really think about otherwise, super fires, thunderstorms, things that you might think aren't too catastrophic on their own, combining. And these parks have been here for millennia. Within the last few decades, the degradation, it's something to behold, that's for sure. And as she was saying, some of these parks may not be there for our grandchildren. And so we are kind of trying to affect change without harming the parks at all. And so as a graduate student, knowing that I will be potentially dealing with this in the very near future as these changes are being put into place, it's just kind of compelling to me, I think. It's sad, but it's also hopeful for the future. And it's kind of moving to me, honestly.
We're speaking with Boise State Anthropology Professor Pei-Ling Yu and graduate student Jennifer Cuthbertson about their partnership with the National Park Service to study cultural sites vulnerable to climate change. So, Pei-Ling, what can we do to save these sites when something like a massive wildfire sweeps through? I guess it comes to prioritization of our efforts.
I think that's correct. There's not enough money and time to fix everything or protect everything. And what we've been doing with the National Park Service most recently is helping them figure out what is most vulnerable and what is most valuable, which is very much a Sophie's choice when you are in a national park. I would say cultural heritage is where American identity and memory live. It's where our diversity as a nation lives, and it's where the basis for our amazing nation lives, going back many thousands of years and up to the present. So prioritizing is a very hard thing to do. In order to do that, we have to look at the vulnerability. So there are some categories of cultural heritage resources, such as, let's say, Independence Hall in Philadelphia. That one is not quite as vulnerable to climate change, because it's in an urban area with a lot of protective mechanisms. However, I've been working recently in Glacier National Park, where we have seen ice and snow melting. Glaciers are melting quickly. And in order to assess what's the most vulnerable, we have to know what we have there, which it requires an inventory. And that's hard, too. But I will say that we also have a responsibility to learn from these things. For example, in Glacier National Park and in Yellowstone, which is closer to home, there have been a series of projects with Craig Lee of Montana State University, with Jason LaBelle of Colorado State University, and with others, Robert Kelly at University of Wyoming, and tribal partners, Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes, the Blackfeet Nation, and others, are going to these ice and snow patches to look for ancient items that have been locked in time capsules that might be 6,000 years or older. In Rocky Mountains National Park, they've been found entire frozen forests, which give an idea as to how high up the tree line went. We found almost an entire bull bison on top of a mountain in Glacier. We don't know what he was doing up there, perhaps looking for a girlfriend in all the wrong places. in Yellowstone, there have been basketry. Like, we found an entire basket in Yellowstone National Park melting out of an old ice patch. And also an atlatl, or a spear thrower, was found by Dr. Craig Lee, which was more than 10,000 years old, had been stomped on by a hoofed animal, and still had notches in it from Probably the owner was making his or her, I'm going to say there are women hunters too, probably, marks on this. And I would imagine a snowy landscape where someone is launching a spear from their spear throw and has the ownership's marks so that somebody who finds it maybe later in the snowbank, that's Joe's. Okay, we'll get it back to him. So there are some ancient stories also coming out of climate change, and that is, I guess, the research silver lining.
Can you give us a sense of the reception to this work from the gatekeepers, the people who pull the trigger on funding and prioritization? And quite often they're elected officials and people who are pretty high up on the org chart.
I would say the reception to this kind of research has been positive. Overall, of course, you know, the political climate has changed a lot since the Climate Change Response Program first came online, which was in the early days of the Obama administration. Basically, I would say at the park level is really where I see the appreciation of these efforts at this time. Park managers are keenly aware day to day. They're the boots on the ground. They know what's going on in their parks. They care about their parks. They want to share them. They want our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to appreciate the parks. So I have a little more experience with people who work in parks. Also, the regional programs, their job is to help those parks. But for really, I would say the National Park Service, just speaking from my point of view as a former Park Service person, it's really got to be sort of park forward and park first and to help the people who are out there on the ground every day.
Jennifer, we just have a minute left here, but give us a sense. We're counting on you to change the world. What are you going to do with this research? What do you want to do with your life?
Oh, man. In 1 minute, huh? Well, moving forward, I think the groundstone has been set, certainly. These programs have been a little bit in place. This is unique work that we're doing, I think, but at least the foundations are there. And luckily, the good thing about this is that we've met so many wonderful people who are willing to help. So moving forward, I think the first steps are going to be for me and any other students involved in this work to start networking and find others who are like us, find others who really desperately want to save these cultural resources and take it into the future.
But first things first, back to school, right? Back to Boise?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's graduate student Jennifer Cuthbertson and Boise State anthropologist Palin Yu. Thank you so very much. Fascinating stuff. Up next, wildlife, smoke, and your health. I'm George Prentice. This is Idaho Matters, and you're listening to Boise State Public Radio.